Oh my god, that was a sepulchral sort of sound. This is Dykes on Mics, the 31st of May. And my god, I can hear things for the first time in months. I can hear my own voice in my headphones. I can even hear Joanne's voice in my headphones. Say something, Deborah.
Okay, yeah, I can hear myself in the headphones too, yeah. Well, it seems that the system is operating again at its capacity so we can all hear each other. Although I must say my headphones weigh a ton.
So. And our microphone is held up by a block of wood, as usual.
But other things are working fine. Okay, that's just to let you know what's happening right in our immediate vicinity. And just prior to us coming on, the boys, Queer Corps, had five guys in here breathing and talking and sweating, so it's got
really,
remnants
Deborah.
Of that.
You make it sound so much more exciting than it actually was.
It is. It is exciting. Okay, so tonight it's 7:01. We've got a full hour, and we're going to talk to Mary Margaret about the Queer Sites Conference in Toronto. That was 2 weeks ago. And then for the second half or three quarters of the show, approximately, we have a lot of news stuff, media stuff.
And Barbie.
Barbie. We've got the Mondo Barbie book. Also, I've got a pirate story about female pirates. And depending on various interpretations, they were lovers or they participated in orgies. And although that's just the titillating aspect of it, mostly the story is not about sex between the pirates. It's about just the female pirates. So we'll get to that later.
And this is Mary Margaret. Thanks a lot for joining us.
No problem.
Short notice.
Well, last night. That's not that short. Don't worry about it.
So you attended the Queer Studies Conference in Toronto. What made you decide to go in the first place?
One of the women from LBGM let us know about it, so a whole bunch of us decided to go because we want to work on implementing queer studies at McGill. Yeah. Hopefully, if we can't do that, to make sure there's some sort of interdisciplinary thing between the four schools. But really, there's no models to go after in Canada. At least that's one of the things that we learned about it. So,
what was the conference like?
It was very heady, very intellectual. We expected there'd be, well, yeah, it was an academic conference, surprise, surprise, that it was heady and intellectual, but we expected that there might be more things about organizing and about how to implement queer studies at universities in Canada, seeing that they do have queer studies programs in the United States. And we hear tell that they might be starting one at University of Ottawa. But no one really knows how to do it yet. And what we were basically doing then was looking at what constitutes queer content and what we should be looking for from professors and what we can look for from subjects that are already there and how to encourage, you know, fellow gays and lesbians to do more. So,
can you give us an example of what queer content might be?
It really ranges. Basically, the conference dealt a lot with communications and cultural studies program things and film. So we heard a lot about Foucault, Lacan, Derrida, Judith Butler, you know, people that if you've done upper level lit theory courses, you've read a lot about. What it is basically is going past postmodern or using a different branch of postmodern and theory and just trying to reconceptualize what we've already seen as normal academics and seeing how far we can push it to understand our own inclusion and what is queer and what isn't. And it sounds like queer is a bit different than gay and lesbian and bisexual anyway, so at least that's the way people were defining it, as pretty well being a continuum, yet it was somehow bipolar and it was opposite, directly opposite to heterosexual, but it still existed on a continuum and basically included anything that wasn't heterosexist or heterosexual.
Because somehow you'd think that on that continuum would include perhaps people who maybe identify as heterosexual, but not in a conventional sense or a straight sense, too. So,
yeah, well, for example, one of the big things that was talked about was male lesbians.
No kidding. Okay, as a concept, what is that?
Okay.
Let's get into that
a little. One of the things I came away from this conference with was a bit more of an open mind about things and try not to to be so political about identification, but I still can't help it. But basically, a male...
It takes a while,
I know. Male lesbians, I guess, are women identified. They identify, I guess, if they're a social constructionist, as woman, not as man. And they thus and are attracted to women, so they consider themselves lesbians because they consider themselves women and who like women.
Wow.
Is this a transgendered kind of thing? Or
Not everyone's necessarily...
So it can coincide, but may not be...
Exactly. Huh. Exactly. It can be, you know, Joe Schmo walking down the street, one of our profs.
But how do you feel about I met Principal Johnson once. I don't think he's a male lesbian.
Really? He's from my hometown. That's all I know.
Okay, transgendered. Perhaps you could explain that just a bit. Because it's a term that's being bandied about quite a lot lately, and I don't know if everybody really has a handle on.
I don't think that there should be a handle, or I think one of the things that they're trying to do is make sure that there isn't a defined term or a defined idea of what cross-gender means and transgender. One of the best sessions I saw dealt with lesbian cross-dressing, for example, and I'll flip to it in my book, but I'll just elaborate a bit about it. Basically, it was just about going beyond social constructionist norms of how woman and man should be. It's very feminist in its orientation, at least that's what they were talking about, and then identifying with who you really feel you are. So I don't know. I don't feel qualified to talk about it, really, because I don't consider myself an expert on transgender
issues. No, but I guess just your opinion, maybe, of what that might be?
Like Mary Margaret, if some man comes up to you on the street and goes, I'm a woman-identified lesbian, might you not look at that with a bit of skepticism? I know I would.
Oh, I'd be incredibly skeptical, and I might tell him to go into therapy, and I'm sorry if that offends anyone, but it's just really difficult. I really hate to comment on what someone else's headgear is all about, but it just seemed one of the things that this conference talked about a lot is looking beyond what we even know now and looking beyond all the intellectual norms and how we really politicize identity, because identity politics came up a lot, and what constitutes a lesbian and what doesn't. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, if a man said he was a lesbian, I'd say, no, you're heterosexual. And there really is something to be said about, you know, what makes a man and what makes a woman in today's society, but I still can't, you know, that whole gut reaction part, that third wave feminist part of me says, no, I'm sorry, you know, you're a little wrong there, you're heterosexual, deal with it, and then, you know, come talk to me. You might be more empathetic to lesbian concerns, you might read a bit more than the average man, but, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, according to New York Magazine, lesbianism is in, it's hip, it's happening to be a lesbian, so maybe that's part of it, too.
Yeah,
you know?
I know.
Men want to be lesbians.
They want to jump on the bandwagon.
Everyone, I hear it's a very hip thing to do, but you have to be a lipstick lesbian, you know, like you can't
be one of those old-fashioned butch lesbians.
Yeah, exactly, you have to
well, that's, definitely a 90s thing, yeah.
Yeah, you have to dress well, you have to look like Sharon Stone in Basic Instinct, which wouldn't be a bad thing, I think, but, you know, but everyone has to look like that, and that'd be kind of boring after a while. I don't know.
Mary Margaret, I went to the Veal and Rose conference here, and a lot of the concerns that people were talking about at that conference were about how there was almost no bisexual content and almost no content by people of color, and sort of not, it was weighed more on the gay male and less on the lesbian side. Did you find that those problems had been solved or had at least been better thought out at Queer Science?
Well, there's a whole range there. First of all, about
all of them in 2 minutes.
All of them in 2 minutes or less. As for bisexuality, there are a couple small sessions on bisexual women and nothing really about bi men. And one of the people from the McGill contingent was a bi man. And in fact, Elizabeth Grosch, who was the keynote speaker, dissed, I guess, bisexuality and told bisexuals that they should make up their mind. And this was the keynote speaker, and that pretty well set the tone for the rest of the conference. And it really shocked me to see so many people clapping and applauding. And I was just, how dare you comment on what someone else is? So there really wasn't enough, and I think there should have been more, because I really do think that it's something we have to explore more within the community. From what I understand, though, there's going to be a course on bisexuality at Concordia next year, so that's exciting. As for people of color, it was really exciting to see what was done. There weren't a lot of people of color there who were delegates. However, there was a reception for people of color. The Gay and Lesbian Community Awards, the Desh Paresh conference got an award, as well as Makeda Silvera, who does Sister Vision Press. So there was a lot of celebration of people of color, especially lesbians of color, which was exciting and good to see. But there was still faulty analysis, very white analysis. People weren't looking at race as a part of, you know, as an equally oppressing force or something that might hinder an individual's development. So that I noticed as a white person sitting in conferences. And as for lesbian, there was plenty of lesbian content, like half and half, I'd say. It was very good, very, very good.
How about some of the highlights for you?
Highlights for me. Meeting Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall.
Really?
Yeah, that was very cool.
How did that come about?
There was a talk show at the end of the conference, and it was the only real fun event that was conference organized. And he had done it, and it was like Phil Donahue, and people were asking, like Samuel Delaney was there, and Jacqueline Woodson, and Sue Golding, and they're, you know, asking them questions about life. Anyone can ask them questions about anything. A lot of it was about sex. But Scott was... yeah, what a big surprise. And Scott was the moderator, which was very cool. And afterwards, I just went up to him, introduced myself, because a couple of my friends really, really love him. And I have a friend who does a better buddy or a better queen than he does. So I had to tell him this. And, you know, I had to meet him. And I wanted to send him the videotape. But he's a very sweet man. And he was very concerned about my nose ring because I was twisting it a lot. And he was like, it must be infected. And he was checking it out. It's very cool. And I told him to come to Montreal soon. I think he's very... I heard a lot of people were saying that he's very snotty and very aloof. But he was very... genuine and nice. So I don't know. Maybe he was comfortable in the community. You know, that was there.
And what are the kinds of things were organized around the conference? I mean, as far as I understood, there were the Lesbian and Gay Film and Video Festival was happening.
Yeah,
as
Inside
well as
Out
the,
was happening.
The Zine Festival and what else?
There was, well, I think there was the three mainly. Well, Inside Out, the film, and the Zine Festival I found out about at the end, and Queer Studies. That's a lot happening.
Yes, yes, yeah. At one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also the Community Awards, the Toronto Gay and Lesbian Community Awards. Or were they Canadian? I think they were Canadian, yeah.
Well, Canadian what? Canadian...
Gay and Lesbian Community Awards for, like, Kiss and Tell Collective got an award for drawing the line.
For provoking the most homophobic comment from a government minister.
Possible, yeah, there you go. So... there was a lot happening, and there was really good community, and there were great parties happening.
Tell us about the parties.
I went to a Latin, similar to Bar Saint Laurent, understand, but it was a gay bar. And so, like, I had like a whole bunch of mixed signals happening in my head. You know, like I'm used to Bar Saint Laurent coming down the stairs, a man grabbing me and lambading me, and there it was just very cool to see men in drag and everyone dancing.
That never happens to me in Bar Saint Laurent.
That always happens to me. Always.
And it's always the same man, the same lambada.
It's the same all the time. I don't know. I just don't go anymore.
He lies in wait.
Yeah, he does. I had to get the cops after him, peace bond and everything. I don't know. Anyway. So that was kind of neat, and that was a people of color, or the delegates of color thing. And there was another reception at a new bar, which it was called Sue's Doll, and it was also a gay bar. So that was, it was neato. It was a lot of fun, and I really came to like the Toronto community a lot.
And who was there? Toronto, obviously, a lot of Montrealers, I imagine. But
Vancouver. What else?
Maritimers?
Very few. Very few. There was one man from the Annapolis Valley, and that was...
Wow. The Annapolis Valley.
Yeah.
How big are we talking here? I don't even have a sense of the size of the conference.
Oh, I'd say 500 people.
Wow, so that's large. Did we have any international?
Oh,
else?
There were people from South Africa. There were people from Britain.
Cool.
From all over the States. So it was really great. You know, it was... they advertised for another conference that's happening in Amsterdam, so there was a real community happening, like, you know, making sure that queer studies is out there and that we all encourage it. So it was neat.
Do you find that these conferences are kind of frustrating because they don't always lead to concrete action? Because I've gone to conferences in other fields, and that's always my biggest complaint, is that everyone gets all fired up and then it seems to just dissipate at the end of the weekend, or you go home by yourself and you think, oh, well, you haven't really been given any tools to carry on what you've learned at the conference.
That was, I would say, my largest complaint was that no one talked to us. No, there wasn't a caucus for people who wanted to organize queer studies at schools. However, there was a conference that I attended on Canadian AIDS activism, and it was activism oriented, so it wasn't so much political process. Or in fact, one of the speakers, Leslie Gaynor, kind of I always use this word, I know it's not a proper word, but dissed the whole process and political process, and advocated that we act now, which I think is a lot more of what you were talking about, Krellen, how you want to come away with some tools, being mm-hmm. able to do something as opposed to just navel gazing mm-hmm. and thinking about everything. It was interesting, the people who really disliked the fact that she was saying, no, don't, that she wasn't so hung up on process, that she was saying we have to act now. And I think it's, there are the people who are activists, but they won't really go to these conferences because they're starting to realize that, if you want to get something done, this isn't where you go learn about it. You learn about it through your inner process, and then you go out and do things, and you help people or do whatever you want to do. But it's absolutely necessary in another way to create the links. So.
It's networking.
That's why I went. I was supposed to network and schmooze. So.
And you did.
I schmoozed a little, but not a lot. I got some good speakers for AIDS Action Awareness Week. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was happy about that.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us.
No problem.
And thanks for being on the show.
Anytime.
We'll go to musical break, and we'll be back with selected items from the media.
She is full frame, she is center stage. My imagination is rattling its cage. You know, I didn't really notice when everything else disappeared. But as far as I'm concerned, if it isn't her, it isn't here. Was God's gift to hypocrisy with weak knees and a big
this is Ani DeFranco, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. Ta-da!
I know it's on, but...
Hello. You're on, but I'm not.
No, you're on, too. We're all on.
Okay, now we are.
Okay.
News. Deborah, let's talk about news. Let's get ourselves off of Ani's voice for a moment there. And
okay, so, well, what kinds of things have you got?
I've got a whole bunch of stuff, actually.
Okay, me too. First of all, actually, what I wanted to say was I was watching the Shirley Show about 2 weeks ago, and they were talking about lesbian and gay marriages, and there were about 15 panelists up on the stage, which is... crazy, I think, because nobody ever gets to talk.
Which is what they like in those shows. They like just cutting everyone off and saying, it's time for another commercial now.
Commercial break, we'll address that when we come back from the commercial break. And of course, they never address that when they come back from the commercial
break. That's an interesting point. Unfortunately, we can't get into it right now.
But anyways, it was about lesbian and gay marriages. And who was in the audience and who spoke up but Vula? There she was. On the Shirley Show. And Vula is the woman who started Dykes on Mics and named it Dykes on Mics and introduced the tune, the theme song. So that's all Vula. Anyway, so there she is, ranting on the Shirley Show about just having the right to choose between marriage or not non-marriage. And for the intro to her little diatribe was directed at a straight woman, a sociologist, I think, who said something about it, and Vula just pointed to her and said, I don't really have to listen to anything you have to say because you're straight. And then off she went. And on the Arsenio Show, I saw...
The lesbian comedian. No, we have several.
We have several, but the one whose shtick revolves around being a lesbian, and her name's Leah Delaria, and I saw her 2 or 3 weeks ago, and apparently she'd been on in March as well, so twice. And her shtick is pretty funny, and it's just interesting that it's all about dykes. And she yells a lot, and she's very, very hyper. She's sort of shortish, and she lowers her center of gravity. She hunches her shoulder a bit, and she kind of wanders around the stage yelling and shrieking, and I'm a dyke, and over and over again.
What does Arsenio do?
Well, that part... You know, that was her routine, and that was funny, that was okay. But then the interview with Arsenio was predictably... What's the word? He couldn't, you know, he asked her off the top, how was that thing in Washington?
That thing?
That thing in Washington. And of course she set him straight and said, well, that thing was a lesbian and gay march, and there was a million people there. It was only the largest thing in U.S. history.
A little shindig.
A little shindig, yeah. And then things got sort of hyper, and she said that the times are changing because she is on a show like Arsenio's, and she was on twice, and so this she felt was progress. And then Arsenio sort of said, yeah, but you're funny. Yeah, but you're funny. And anyway, so she jumped him at this point and turned to the audience and said, oh, you know, this man's so good to me, da-da-da-da-da. And then Arsenio couldn't resist, and he said... You know, the last time you were on the show, we ended up doing something physical like this. We always end up doing something physical like this. I bet you really want to give it to a man.
Oh, no.
Yes, of course he said that. But, I mean, she sort of set that whole thing up, really. You know, I mean, how could he resist? Or how could he not doing that, being, you know, the sort of fella that he is? Anyway, so she kind of did a mock death thing and fell to the floor in...
Agony,
or... disgust, one of the two, and that was it. They went off the air and end of that. But
apparently she had her joke was about, one of her jokes that I heard was about finally having someone in the White House not build but Hillary that was fuckable.
Oh yes, that she said that on, I guess, the first time she was on Arsenio. Yeah.
Oh, in March.
Yes.
But
yes.
I think it's an important point and one that's been overlooked. I mean, Hillary...
You think Hillary's cute?
Well, I'd just say that if you had a choice between Reagan, Mrs. Bush, and Hillary, like, which one would you prefer in your bed?
Which one would you choose? It's true. Nancy Reagan was scary.
Oh,
scary,
she was
scary,
frightening.
Eh?
Like, I would be... I would call somebody to get her out.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Bush, I mean, there's way too much of a mother complex going
absolutely,
on there for me.
Absolutely.
Whereas that would never work.
More of a, yeah. You like your professor,
cool.
Say, at school.
Execudike. Very.
Yeah. Okay, well, there you go. And one other thing. Paula Poundstone's a female comedian, and she rented out a billboard in Colorado Springs to protest against Amendment 2, and it said... Maybe you misunderstood the question. No one is asking you to have sex with gay people, just to give them equal protection under the law. And apparently she rented out this huge billboard.
She rented out actually 15, I heard, 15. And 15 different billboards, and she paid for it out of a concert that she did. I'm not sure.
Oh, she donated... Okay, hang on a second. To pay for this message, Ms. Poundstone donated the money she made when she performed at the Wheeler Opera House in Aspen.
Yeah, which is kind of a nice symmetry. The other interesting thing about Paula Poundstone is that, speaking of visibility, she is on the back page in Mother Jones magazine, and she's doing a sort of comic advice column, and so if you have any dyke questions for her, she says she'll answer almost anything.
Oh, you don't say.
Why not test it out? That's what I say. She's kind of cute, too. Check out her photo.
Well, she's sort of funny. I think she was in the Five Feminist Minutes. She was in the Five Feminist... No. Wisecracks.
Wisecracks.
Yeah. The film about... You know, thanks for being on top of that, Corella.
Well, an anti... Speaking of the states, in Bremerton, Washington, an anti-gay proposal was killed by a margin of about 3-2 in a high school. Students at Bremerton High School stopped this proposal, which would ban openly gay classmates from serving on the school's student council. And
this is where?
This is in, am I going to say this word correctly? Bremerton, Washington. It's a small town in northern Washington, I guess. But apparently there'd been lots of debates going on, students had been politicking, and the media had really picked up on it in the States and had been monitoring this as, I guess, sort of a microcosm, what with all the anti-gay ordinances going on in the rest of the country. And they said that in the people who were trying to get the proposal passed were saying that it would sort of endorse an immoral lifestyle to actually have these openly gay candidates running for council. And anyway, the vote ended up 57% against the proposal and 43% in support. And one of the students who had been against the ban said that he was actually disturbed by the number of people who voted in favor of the ban, even though it wasn't passed.
Oh, well... There was a school board, well, there is a school board in Meridian, Idaho, and they've asked a student human rights group to revise its constitution and eliminate such terms as tolerance and cultural diversity. Board chairman Steve Givens explained to the Idaho Statesman, quote, "We asked them to clean up the language so that it isn't oriented towards homosexuality."
Oh, no.
This is what it says.
Because you can't be tolerant of, well, I don't like people use the word tolerance for gays and lesbians either. I don't think they're doing it in the spirit in which I would.
No, Corinna, I think it's coming from the other direction, in fact. They want to eliminate those words from the Constitution because the chairman believes that this language promotes homosexuality.
So wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, but, yeah.
If it only took that little, come on. President Clinton is near to fulfilling his promise of ending the ban on gays in the military. But Clinton, I don't know if you've been following this story, but I have, and Clinton has worked out an interesting little compromise. Well, he hasn't specifically said he's going to do this, but a lot of people like Senator Sam Nunn and Representative Barney Frank, they're both Democrats, but Barney Frank is the openly gay member of the House, I think the only one. And Nunn is the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Nunn opposes lifting the ban, but he said he could support allowing gays to serve so long as they remain closeted both on and off duty. So it's, in other words, it's fine if you're gay or lesbian in the military as long as you don't tell anyone about it or do anything about it or...
Which is pretty much what they do now.
Right, exactly. And
except it wouldn't be illegal, so...
Yeah, isn't that charming? It's pretty much what you do almost everywhere or if you're afraid of losing your job. But to institutionalize it like this, doesn't that seem somewhat sick to you? And there's an article in... Oh, God, I've had a complete blackout. Well, anyway, I'll try and figure out where I read this article, but there was an article in a major U.S. magazine, which I cannot remember the name of, that talked about... It was in The Voice last week, and it talked about... Terry Helvey, who killed a shipmate who was gay in the U.S. Navy and did so basically because the guy was out. But the the mother of this kid who was killed, who has now become sort of a crusader, was saying that really on some ships her son had told her it was tolerated and in that sort of patronizing way, but still as you could be homosexual and serve, and depending on the climate in the ship, it was okay. I mean, the commanding officer would knew about it, and your shipmates knew about it, and if there was this climate of acceptance, then as long as you didn't, you know, push the issue, you could get along fine, which is totally in what direct opposition to the policy as they have it now.
Well,
so
not much.
This would not be a good step in the right direction, I don't think.
It wasn't really a step at all.
Yeah.
That's our opinion.
Anyway, the U.S. Navy did sentence Terry Helvey, who killed his shipmate, to life imprisonment for the murder, which was particularly brutal. The kid was beaten to death in a urinal and that sort of thing. So at least they're punishing him appropriately. What can I say?
For murdering somebody.
Yes.
Let's see. Well, let's go to something... something else, just for a second, shall we?
Something a little lighter?
Yeah.
You're
gonna like this. Okay, this is from Natural Breast Enlargement. They're instructional tapes, and there's a series of 6 audio tapes produced by Sublime Software in Glendora, California. It's a 12-bit...
from which all good things come.
Oh, yes. Good and trendy. The 12-week program, which is based on the theory that certain traumatic events during puberty inhibit maximum breast development.
I knew it.
Uses hypnosis and creative visualization to stimulate breast growth. The set of tapes cost $69.95. So here's just a little sampling, okay, of what you would hear if you were, in fact, to listen to these audio tapes.
I'm closing my eyes.
Focus your attention on my words. Your breasts become whatever they are willed to be. You are the authority over your breasts. You can do it. You are a winner. You are lovable and you are loved. You celebrate your femininity. You are a loving and forgiving woman. You forgive yourself for not developing to your fullest. Large, full breasts make you feel satisfied, fulfilled, and vital. There is a full-length mirror in front of you. You have returned to the age where your breasts are developing. Each breast is as tender as it was during puberty. Your breasts grow like ripening fruit. Huh. They're warm and they're growing. Imagine it is 2 years from today and you are looking back at your accomplishments. The permanent size and shape of your breasts please you. There is a permanent tightness and firmness. Your clothes fit exactly the way you want them to fit. You have just the right amount of cleavage. You rejoice in your permanent enlargement.
Wow.
How convenient.
And you put it on your resume too. My permanent enlargement.
Naturally done, no silicone. There's also, I have mentioned on this show, this fellow in Florida, Michael Stivers, who's a hypnotherapist, and he hypnotizes his patients back to puberty and has them visualize their budding breasts. And, you know, apparently they grow. It takes 8 to 10 sessions, though, and it costs about $1,000. Yep, and he's also thinking of doing that with penises.
Really?
Yeah, well, that's what he said, yeah. Okay, I think we'll go to a musical break and we'll be back, I think, with Barbie stuff.
Lots of Barbie. We've got lots to tell you about Barbie tonight.
We'll be right back. for the sea is more than just a phrase to throw around. You know what I mean? Listen to sounds from the underground. Every Monday night from 8 o'clock on 2 hours, Montreal's best and France will make it ours. All of us, all of us, listening religiously. All the news and gossip through CKUT.
It's good.
We're back.
Recycling is good.
Recycling is good. We're going to talk about Barbie a bit, mostly because there's a new book called Mondo Barbie out, and Carolyn was saying she'd reviewed it for another... for Lesbo Info, and that that she felt that wasn't a good thing to do. But I said, recycling is good.
But I said, this book is so amazing, and I've been trundling it around and reading it to all my friends, and I thought, there you go. It's definitely worth it. It's something I would have probably even paid money for.
But you didn't?
No, but I didn't, because I reviewed it. But before we get into Barbie, I just want to say that we've made the Globe and Mail in a rather oblique way. There's Word Watch, which is a sort of feature in their social studies section about the coinage of new words, has noted the term femchismo. And femchismo is defined as the philosophy behind new erotica, which is used to differentiate it from pornography. Susie Bright, femchismo's leading author and spokeswoman, notice they don't say she's lesbian, describes the burgeoning woman's erotica movement as, quote, the aggressive, seductive, and very hungry sexual ego of a woman.
Very hungry, sexual ego.
Very hungry.
Starving.
Perhaps we should give it some steak, that poor sexual ego.
Oh, no, she's a vegetarian. No,
oh, my God,
no,
she is not.
No, she's not. Of course she's not. That was a joke. Okay, so on to Mondo Barbie. Now, I've got this rather dull review, but just as some kind of assessment, it says, as icons go, Barbie is right up there with Elvis. Her influence on American culture over the last 30 years has been not only vast, but vastly controversial. She's not a bimbo, she is the bimbo. Her primary values are consumerism, popularity, and personal appearance.
Which reminds me of so many people I know. As a matter of fact, that's how our entire high school years were defined. Think about it.
Consumerism, popular, and personal appearance.
Think about that. Exactly. That is exactly the top three worries. I don't have enough money. No one likes me.
I'm not popular enough.
And my clothes. Look at my clothes.
My pimples, my hair. Oh, that's pathetic. Yeah, I hate talking about high school.
Yeah,
actually.
I'm so glad we're out of high school. Yeah. Did you have any Barbies?
No, I never did. Oh. I never had a Barbie. I had Skipper, who was Barbie's younger sister.
Skipper, whose breasts grew, Skipper?
Yes, growing up Skipper, you revolve the arms around and breasts grow, and then you revolve the arms back and they pop back in.
But only if she should have known how to say that, you know, little mantra that you recited earlier, and then she would have kept them for good.
He's just a doll. But no, I didn't
she
have Barbie.
Channel.
I just got interested in Barbie a couple of years ago, mostly because she was everywhere, and I just started picking up little bits and pieces of Barbie, and so people naturally thought that I was you know, a big fan of Barbie, and that surely I had lots of Barbies, but no, not really. In fact, I do have two Barbies. Well, one Barbie and one Fran, apparently.
Oh, that's a lesser quality doll.
It is, but nonetheless, they're buddies, and so some friends gave them to me, and there they sit at home. But basically, the first thing I ever discovered about Barbie, or what really made me sit up and pay attention, was that in a magazine I saw Barbie's resume in a magazine, Barbie 30th Anniversary Magazine, published by a group in New York City. And anyway, so, you know, they
Barbie has a fan magazine?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Anniversary Magazine. And yes, and she also has a magazine. Well, she doesn't have a magazine, but people have...
Oh, I'm not surprised. I'm sure she does. Somewhere. Someone's thought of it.
Barbie Bazaar. Here it is. Barbie Bazaar. It's a queer mix of couture and camp, dolled up with Mattel ads and scads of photos of America's skinniest sweetheart. Barbie Bazaar does big business, reporting on the hundreds of Barbie conventions held each year and the wonders of tiny synthetic attire. There is an estimate that about 10%...